If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Well, hello there.
Hello, how are you?
Embarrassingly well. Yourself, Matthew?
You're always embarrassingly well.
I'm just so embarrassed by how well I am.
This week's guest is a man with a name destined to belong within the Goalkeepers Union. After spells at Barry Town, Cardiff City and Newport County during his time as a player, it's his career as a goalkeeper coach where this man mountain has made his name with an ever-growing reputation among British football's coaching elite. Now ensconced in the daily activities of backroom staff at Bristol City, Pat Mountain, welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello, thank you. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. As we've said, this particular podcast will focus more on your time as a goalkeeper coach. We'll get into Wolves, where you spent 9 years, the spell at Hull, Forest Green Rovers, and of course now Bristol City. But first, the season is 1996-97. The venue, Pat, is Jenner Park. Pat Mountain, yourself, he knows what's coming. You're in a big old baggy goalkeeper top, aren't you, Pat? You're in goal after Mark Ovendale had been sent off in the first leg of a UEFA Cup second qualifying round for Barry Town against the great Budapest Vasutas. The first leg in Hungary was 3-1 to the home side. Barry have pulled off a remarkable 3-1 reverse in the second leg to restore parity to the tie. Pat, penalties are upon us. What happens next?
Question that you brought this up, completely unprompted, because probably the start of my coaching career was the night before this replay, because I stayed at Jenner Park to watch them train, the Hungarians. So I was only about 20, 21 at the time. So I stayed to watch them train. At the end, they all practiced penalties. And I watched them very closely, obviously, without them knowing I was there. And I just noticed that about, probably like 8 or 9 practiced, and at least 8 of them stuttered on their run-up and watched the goalkeeper as they ran up. So I thought, if it goes to penalties, it's not much of a chance it is going to go to penalties. But if it does go to penalties, you know what? I'm just going to stand up for every single one and not go early and just see what happens. And that's what happened. And that's why, if you manage to find it on YouTube, I am slow anyway. It does make me look super slow going down for the penalty. But the vital one, because I stood on the ground and reacted, managed to get a touch onto the crossbar. So, yeah, a youthful looking with quite a lot of hair. And also the interesting thing is the number on my back, he didn't actually have a shirt with a number on, so we made the number out of tape, medical tape, and stuck it on beforehand. So it's the sort of stuff that comes out later on.
No, but you know what, Pat? I looked at the number because I saw that it wasn't number one. It was like number, was it 18 or 13 or something?
Do you know what? I really don't know what it was, but I can remember we made it with tape, stuck it on the back and hoped it stayed on.
Absolutely brilliant.
You ain't for cup glories.
Well, it was the first time, wasn't it, that Barry Town had reached the first round proper in European competition. And the guy who stepped up, Zoltán Buksaegi, he was the captain of Budapest at the time. And with regards to your save, 100%, like it looks quite spectacular, quite emphatic, because often you don't see those kinds of saves and penalties. You've stayed upright, but because you've also dived and you've tapped it onto the bar and then fallen to the ground, incredible save.
There was one I think they put wide as well, and I sort of thought, because I've stood for a long time, that maybe has forced him to do it. And that's why the other two that go in that I dive very late for. I'm not saying I was quick, but it does make me look super slow. And the goalies I've coached over the years have had good fun recounting those YouTube clips to me. I just said, just didn't have proper cameras in those days. Everything looks a little bit slower. So
yeah. Well, in terms of your playing career, like I said, we'll move on to your career as a coach because that's where most of the talking points and the discussion in this podcast are going to come from. But is that the highlight, do you think, for you, or were there better times after that?
That was probably the best time for me. I was just, I think, second year pro at Cardiff on loan at Barry. And just before that, I had got into Wales in the 21s and we played Holland away. To make myself look stupid, I can't remember. There was like 3 or 4 big hitters who had amazing careers who were playing, and we won 1-0. And we were basically made up of a team of of mostly sort of second and third division reserve footballers away in Holland and beating them 1-0. And then I'd managed to make my debut after that, Barry Town, when I went back to Cardiff. We played Gillingham in the FA Cup. And it was, so what was that, 96, you're saying? It was, I think it was live on Sky. And what many live games in those days. And it was me in one goal and Jim Stannard in the other. And there was obviously a big difference there because Jim was
big old
tall
boy.
And big. And also getting to his, towards his 40s at the time. And I was young, very skinny and not big. When I left Cardiff, I did my cruciate in the summer. Pre-season training with Barry Town. So that wasn't great. And that's when I started sort of getting interested in the coaching side then. I did have 5 years playing at Newport as a playing career. But during that time, being part-time, I'd started coaching from probably the age of about 22, 23. I had my B licence, outfield and goalkeeping. So I was very heavily into that, even when I was playing.
So that is really early, isn't it? To start your badges in your early 20s. I mean, I imagine a lot of people listening to this who are aspiring to be a goalkeeper coach. I guess that's good to know that you can start that early and get to the place where you were. Because obviously you retired. Was it 27 that you retired?
By then, I'm pretty sure I had my A licence and my goalkeeping A licence as well. So outfield and goalkeeping by the time I got to that. Throughout my time playing, I was interested in coaching. So even as a young pro at Cardiff, I'd sort of help out. I've made that point then about Barry. That's probably when I got a real first foot. I thought, you know what? I've actually watched research that it's worked and helped me as a player. Once you end up playing part-time, you realise you're not going to have that big, glorious career. So what can I do next? I can still play to a good level, but I can start coaching early on. And I really enjoyed it. And that was sort of taking groups of... I set up my own little coaching schools just with kids, not particularly goalkeeping. And then the more it went along, the more I went down the coach education route and got more interested sort of in coaching the position I played in. And that was where it all started, really.
As more of a general one, I guess, at that point, like you say, you saw the penalties in particular and saw ways in which you could... well, in the end, you were obviously the hero that night, that ways in which you could impact the game and help goalkeepers. Did you have a general idea, like a philosophy that you wanted to take into coaching?
No, definitely not. Because I was so young, I don't think I could have had that. I didn't have the experience. I wanted to make things fun and enjoyable for everybody. That can get lost sometimes in professional football. They have to be enjoyed as well. So I think from taking groups of young kids from an early age group, you soon realise that if you make it fun and enjoyable, that's sort of half the battle, really. And I've carried that through. But from going in sort of almost inexperienced to coaching from a very young age in terms of life experience and people skills experience, I've had to sort of build that as I was going along.
Well, we'll touch on now and then we'll come back to the likes of Wolves and the many goalkeepers you work with. But as of speaking, you're working with Dan Bentley, you've got Nicky Maipar and Rennie Gilmartin, of course. So three very different goalkeepers. Keen to know how you mix that up, given that they are three different goalkeepers. But in particular, I want to touch on Dan Bentley. I think Lee Johnson's come out and said some nice comments about him, said that he's an England goalkeeper in the making, essentially. Now, he had a difficult season, it's fair to say, at Brentford. He was brilliant the first couple of seasons there, did very well at Southend. He's amassed a large number of games for a 25, 26-year-old. But he was coming off the back of what was quite a difficult season for him, and he has started very, very well at Bristol City. How have you managed him pre-season and in the early part of the season? How have you helped him do what he's done already?
I'd had a bit of background anyway. When I was at Wolves, we looked at signing him when he was at Southend. At the time, Wolves couldn't, it sounds daft now, they couldn't afford the money that was required for him. I'd done a lot of background research on him. I've watched him play a lot since. I got the job at Bristol City as Dan was in the process of trying to sign for the club. So it was me sort of joining at the same time as Dan. So it was kind of fresh all round, really. this is what he's like. His preparation is unbelievable. He basically just did what you did at the start and knew everything about me after finding out that being employed by the club. So he already knew everything about me and he'd spoke to people who he knew, who he'd worked with, who knew me and found out what I was about. So nice. That gives you an idea of how he operates already. His sort of research and preparation is incredible, really. He's on the back of a problem with his shoulder as well, so he had to manage that really carefully from the start. Nicky Maipar, who also is a top championship goalkeeper, was just coming back from a calf injury he'd had before that. We had Max O'Leary and Jojo Wallacott, two really good young goalkeepers as well. We weren't sure whether they were going to go out on loan or stay. And then obviously I had Rennie come in and sign at the same time as well. So I was new to the job and straight away, this is all there's a million different permutations that could happen there.
Amazing. Well, with that, and you touched on that he did his research on you, which I think this is something that is underestimated by a lot of people outside of the professional environment, then actually for a goalkeeper, the relationship with a goalkeeper coach is key. Now, obviously, yeah. Dan last season was working at Brentford. Had been with Simon Royce, but there was, of course, a change in goalkeeper coach at the start of last season. So he was working with a different goalkeeper coach last year. Now, Dan had he had a difficult season for different reasons, but, of course, he had gone from Simon Royce to a different goalkeeper coach. Whether that had an impact now he's working with you. You know, we talk a lot about that relationship and how the understanding of the goalkeeper, the understanding of how to get the best out of each goalkeeper is key, because each goalkeeper is very different, and I guess you have to coach according to them. It's not a one size fits all, is it? I guess with Dan, what would you focus on with Dan in order to give him the best chance?
I think it's really important. I mean, it sort of gets bypassed a little bit as well when you talk about coaching. They are people as well, so it's how they respond as people. So you've got the dynamics of the group. You've got, say, three senior ones, two sort of up-and-coming ones, and then maybe the younger goalkeepers in that group as well. So managing the sort of dynamics, getting to understand the individuals. I think it's really important that the individuals all think that you're doing your best for them, which I am. I want them all to play, and I want them all to play really well, but they can't. I mean, that's the understanding. I'm doing my best for them. I've not worked with any goalkeeper I thought is a bit of an idiot. You tend to find they're all pretty good people, and they're sort of detailed because they know that any slight little error in the game normally results in a goal. So they're meticulous really in their preparation and the way they go about their job. So you've got the mix of senior boys who all want to be playing. You've got younger ones coming up. I've always found if your main one, if you're number one, or in our case, you say we've got the three seniors, but you'd look at Dan and Nicky as sort of the two first choice. If they're real good examples and good people and good role models, it doesn't help everybody, but more importantly, it helps themselves, because they get the respect back off the other goalkeepers within the group, and they get to feed off each other, really. And I think that's really important and gets bypassed when everyone talks about sort of your sessions and what you do and what you're doing in your training and how you're doing this and that. You forget about the fact that you've actually got to manage a team and group of people and what motivates them individually and collectively, what enthuses them, how you get them to work together to help each other. It's a sort of a big part of the role, really.
Do you think he has got a chance for England, Pat, Dan Bentley?
Why not? I mean, there's probably four or five you go with definitely ahead of him. I think if you're going to get there from the Championship, then you're going to have to do it over a longer period of time than 12 games, that's for sure. You're going to need a little bit. You're going to probably need, which is no good for anybody else, a couple of injuries. But why not? It's something definitely to strive for. It's hard to get into a national team like England from the Championship. If he can get to the Premier League with Bristol City, as Gaff said yesterday, if he was playing in the Premier League with Bristol City, his sort of consistency in his performances would probably warrant him being closer to it. But we'll see. There's a long way to go, but who knows?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it is something that I think is wrong with the England setup. It's much publicised when players like Mason Mount and Tyrone Mings were performing in the Championship last season. They play a few games in the Premier League and suddenly they're called up to the England squad, and you think, are they that different to the player that they were the previous season? It's a bit of a funny one. So with goalkeepers, it's probably even more enhanced, I think, that they would not get a chance when they're in the Championship. But that's a debate for another day, I suppose. But you did just mention something there, which I was going to come on to later, but we'll quickly touch on it, because most goalkeepers that we speak to, especially current goalkeepers, we speak to them about their goalkeeper coaches. And it's never happened on the podcast yet where a goalkeeper has come out and said, oh, I really didn't get on with that guy. You know, it's always that goalkeeper coach really helped me throughout my career. You said just then that you've never worked with a goalkeeper who's a bit of an idiot. And is that always true, that goalkeeper always gets on with coach? Or are there examples, or have there been examples in your career where a player and a goalkeeper coach don't really get on?
I suppose, and also just to add to that point, is it partly by design as well? Because I guess when you're recruiting, you're heavily involved in the recruitment, I'm sure, of goalkeepers at the clubs you've been at. So is it also partly due to that?
Yeah, definitely. That's a big part of it. You definitely need to do your background research, because especially these days, if you've not done it and you just signed someone, it can be a very expensive mistake for the club. Some of the goalkeepers I've worked with, I've had arguments with them. I've not got on with them for periods of time, but I'd like to think they've always thought I'd still do my best for them, be it because they feel I haven't supported them enough or I haven't backed them up with a manager. But it's always been a degree of a professional relationship there. You don't necessarily have to have the massive personal relationship. I'm certainly not somebody who'd go out and socialise with the goalkeepers. I think that's a dangerous one. It's definitely a line there. more than anything else, really, it's important that they get on with the other goalkeepers in the group, you know, and that is where it's happened before, where two of the goalkeepers that I've worked with have probably not seen eye to eye on something, and then that becomes quite difficult. If you're going to go on to the Wolves stuff later on, then I could probably bring that up if we talk about Marcus Hanneman.
Well, we could do it now, Pat. I mean, it's now is the better time than ever, as they say.
So what's an example of that would be, my whole time at Wolves were blessed with really talented goalkeepers. So it was Wayne Hennessy, Carl Hakimi, both with 21, 22-year-olds, and Matt Murray as well in the background there, coming back from another one of his unfortunate long-term injuries. Got promoted in the first year with Wayne playing the majority, but Carl played quite a bit as well. And he gets to Premier League, and Mick McCarthy, quite rightly, wants an experienced goalkeeper as well to battle. That's going to be handy. So we signed Marcus, who'd just been released from Reading in the Championship. I think I was 32 at the time. Marcus came in and was 34, 35 probably. So that was a new experience for me. I'm actually coaching and working with a goalkeeper who's older than me. I didn't have the playing career they did. So Marcus came in, he's already played 3-4 seasons in the Premier League with Reading, so I thought this is going to be a new one for me. What's he going to think? He's got somebody who played most of his games in non-league. He's actually older than the coach. How's this one going to go? And how's he going to get on with the younger one? So Marcus's requirements were completely different from Wayne and Carl, who both wanted to fling themselves around all day, every day, get better, work, shot stopping, crossing, kicking. Marcus would certainly be a lot more chilled and relaxed and would probably like to do a lot more talking than certainly Wayne and Carl would like to do. So that the dynamics of that group was really interesting. But Marcus was brilliant for Wayne and Carl. I'm sure they'd both say they sort of learned a lot off his calm persona and how he went about his work as well. So that was a very interesting group to have to work with there.
In terms of Matt Murray, you mentioned his injuries there. I suppose that you were probably very well placed to give him advice or steer him in the right direction. Of course, his career was cut short through injury as well. And I guess you could relate to that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he'd already been and done a lot for Wolves. He played sort of 100 games. Obviously, he got the playoff campaign there where he saved the penalty and they've won the playoff final. So he was the main guy there in terms of sort of probably all the players, not just the goalkeepers. And Wayne and Carl were someone they really looked up to Matt and saw him as the figurehead. So again, different ways of coaching, my way of really getting Wayne and Carl on side from early on, because I was gone to Wolves, who were in the Championship, and Wayne's already a full international. My job before we got to Wolves was working part-time at Cheltenham and Hereford in League 1 and League 2. So they're already thinking, hang on a minute, where's this guy been? What's he got for us? So it was basically working out quite quick, the dynamics of the group, get Matt on side. I got had a good relationship with Matt, and then obviously then the other two would follow.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Buxtehude then, to make it 3-3. All the pressure on him this time, and he stayed! Mounted! Magnificent work! And the next kick, if it's converted, will put Barry Town into the UEFA Cup first round. What a fantastic save. He went high, and unusually, the keeper got there. The keepers normally dive, but Mountain didn't. He's saved a penalty, and Budapest will be going out.
Look, I want to dig into the coaching a little bit, because you mentioned a few names there and the levels they've gone to, and it's not by luck that a lot of the goalkeepers you work with have increased and gone to bigger levels and played at the highest level, a lot of them. So there's obviously something about the coaching that you're doing. You've said that you like to keep it fun. To dig into it a little bit more, do you have like a set week you do? Not necessarily the same drills, but i.e. doing crossing drills on a certain day, kicking drills, power work. Do you have a set routine?
I think one of the problems is it's a different stage of the week for every goalkeeper quite often. So on a Monday, it might be that Dad's played on the Saturday, so it's his second day recovery, still wants to go on the grass, still wants to do some work. Sports science people don't want them to do too much work, so it's finding that balance. But then the other ones would be thinking, well, they want to work really hard because they haven't played. They want to get their work in, or maybe there's a under-23 reserve game the next day that one of them's playing in. So it's a stage of the week, really. So it's managing their individual load within that week, but I structure the week and focus a bit on the opposition we're playing. If it's Saturday to Saturday, it's obviously a lot easier to do. And then the way that we work at Bristol City, if it's Saturday to Saturday, we'll work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and it's recovery day on Thursday. So a Tuesday will be a fairly physical day, and there'll be quite a bit based on probably the opposition, and the Wednesday it definitely will be. So it might be that if it's an opposition that loads the box, a lot of set pieces, a lot of crosses, that the Wednesday becomes a pretty physical day with a lot of crossing. Tuesday might be a little bit more sort of speed, ability work. There might be some individual stuff in there. I mean, Dan, they've all got individual things that I've identified and agreed with them that they need to work on or touch up. So we've got to keep maintaining that. So I never think it's enough to just keep ticking along. Even with Nicky, who's 33, 34, it's not, oh, just keep ticking along. Well, strive to get better at something, and then you'll definitely keep ticking along anyway. But you can still improve at certain aspects of your game. And definitely with Dan now, he's thoroughly on it to get better and make the tiny little gains in all different parts of his game. So it's not just about his game prep. The Friday session, we tend to do similar stuff. Don't have long anyway. It's always a little bit of fun first, and then there's a routine, really. I mean, I listened to Dean Kiley's one, which is really interesting that he did with him a few weeks ago, and how he thought it's really important to keep the lads guessing, which I agree. They don't know what they're doing every day. They always want to know, but I think it's good they've got to problem solve and work things out for themselves. But then there's definitely a place for routines, particularly in goalkeeping, and that's more closer to a match, I think. A match day, for me, it needs to be the routine that they're comfortable in. And the day before, I try and find something that they like, the goalkeeper who's playing, and stick to that kind of routine and maybe have a slight little variations in it. The principle that you asked about earlier is that the front part of the week is on me. It's what I think you need to do. You can come back at me and say, can we do some more of this or that? No problem. The back end of the week is more about them and what they need to do to feel mentally and physically bang on it for the game on Saturday.
Well, you mentioned the word fun and enjoyment a few times already throughout this, Pat, and you mentioned Dean Kiley as well. I was actually going to bring that up myself, and the fact that he talked about a drill that he did with rugby balls. I know Andy Marshall, who we've had on the podcast, has talked about varying it up and, like you said, keeping it fun and keeping them guessing. I saw one you did with Forest Green where you had them playing foot golf as a collective.
We've done that a few times. That's good fun. That is, we tend to do a little, well, I've done it everywhere I've been, really, the day before a game, where we have a little fun game, try and get the young goalies involved in as well. And basically the loser has to do something for the winner. But it's good because it gets the young lads sort of, if they can beat one of the senior boys, then all of a sudden they've got to get the senior lad to buy him something or serve him dinner or something. So it's sort of, there's a little bit of pressure and a little bit on it. And the foot golf and things like that, I think, are just different. But it gets the banter, it gets the group. We talk about group dynamics already quite a bit. That gets that involved. But you also get to weigh up the player as well when you're playing funny games like football. Like, I'll be trying to get in the younger lads' heads because I want to win. And you can see sometimes they just go with it. They let me get in their heads and they just do, I bet you can't do that. No, you haven't got the guts to do that. And they'll try it. And you think, oh, that's so stupid. You just fall into it. And that you're going to do that on a pitch. The crowd, you're going to go with the crowd, or you're going to do something the opposition is going to wind you up. So no, you can't. You've got to make your own decisions. You've got to be a bit clearer than that. So it gives you sort of an insight into their brains and their character, even the small games. Now, it doesn't matter who you are. If you're playing a game, there might be a pound on it, or there might be a lot more money on it, or there might be some other form of a prize on it that you want to win. You do it as a coach and staff. We have little games and stuff, and whenever you win, you know what it's like, Rich, when you've got the banter and you've won and take a photo and you're all singing and dancing and it goes on for a week. It adds to it. It's a long season. But within that fun bit, you get to see sort of the character and the personality and the traits of people coming out as well. So kind of use that as a disguised way of getting to know them better.
Do you know, it's interesting. It is really interesting you say that. It's probably only, I've only seen this more recently, maybe the last few years than when I played necessarily, where you go out and you might play a game of two touch to begin, or a game of head tennis, another classic for goalkeepers, a bit of head tennis. And there is something in that where the more competitive, I remember playing with Ben Foster and he would have to win everything that he did. And that didn't matter what it was, whether it was football related or not. You know, we'd go and play Topgolf. There was a game in Watford that we'd often go and play, and he'd have to win, you know, and he'd be one of them where he'd be so grumpy if he didn't. And maybe I always wondered, because it didn't bother me as much as him, whether that actually made a difference. But I think it does. I think you want people that are ultra competitive that find
a way. I think one of the ways of adding it is, if a youth team boy can beat one of the seniors at something, then like the senior boy is really driving it. So he does not want to lose to the youth team boy, because he's going to have to do, you know, lose a little bit of face on that, really. And that's, I just think that sort of inner drive to not lose and to win it at everything is a real good trait. It's to not get beaten. It's the goalkeeper trait, not get beaten. Now, that might be golf, might be, sorry, football, golf, head, tennis, any little game that we make up. It's like, to not lose, really, is massive, to not get beaten.
In terms of research, Pat, and you strike me as someone who obviously does a lot of research, you have to nowadays in professional football, scouting and watching games, and in particular, when you took the job at Hull, you were faced with three number ones at the time. David Marshall was there, Alan McGregor was there, and Eldin Jakubovic was there as well. And I know that you watched, or at least you said that you watched everything that they did from the previous season. I just want to kind of get into that, because does that involve going over hours and hours of footage?
Yeah, definitely does, yeah. Wow. So I'd left Wolves. I was fortunate I got a whole job pretty quick, about 2 weeks afterwards, but went for an interview. But before I went for the interview, I thought I need to do my research. So the three names you just mentioned are sort of pretty big hitters anyway, so knew quite a bit about them. McGregor and Marshall both had played for Cardiff. Obviously, Marshall had been brilliant for Cardiff for 5-6 years before he went to Hull. McGregor had been on loan for the last 6 months before I got the job at Hull at Cardiff. So I knew a bit more about them. But yeah, certainly it was a case of like making sure I look, watch, because I knew straight away I'd just been relegated from the Premier League. You're coming down to the Championship. You can't have three of that level. Well, at least one of them's going to have to leave or want to leave. So what's your advice to the club? What's your advice to the manager? I also think if you can watch all those games, when you actually go and speak to the players themselves, they'll think, oh, hang on a minute, he does know. He's watched. He's seen everything from last season. He does know about me. He's got a genuine sort of idea of what I'm about, and he wants to help me. So I think that helps the relationship building from the start as well.
We know you've worked with plenty of players, but that relationship that you've had with players, it's always been quite positive. Is it the same with managers as well? I mean, if we pluck some names out of the air, John Ward, obviously you worked under Mick McCarthy, you worked under Dean Saunders, you were two Welshmen working together, Paul Lambert, who was there for a period. Is it always the case? Obviously, you were with Wolves for 9 years or so, and often we know that when new managers come in, they tend to bring new coaches in with them. You were already at the club. Did that ever cause a problem, or have you managed to have a cohesive working relationship with most of the managers you worked with?
Wolves was quite fortunate with Wolves, really. So I may as well start at the beginning there with John Ward, who gave me my first opportunity. He was fantastic when he was manager of Cheltenham. So I went there part-time coaching Shane Higgs, and Scott Brown, who's still playing now, Port Vale. And that was my first insight into working as a coach, anyway, in professional football. So it gave me a real good grounding with the experience and knowledge he had. Really helped me sort of on the way. It was almost a fast-tracking, really, with him and Keith Downing. It was fantastic. 2.5-3 years with them, I got the job at Wolves under Mick. Terry Connors' assistant as well. And Wolves were sort of fortunate. They'd always said if they dismissed a manager, then the new manager would come in just with his assistant, and they'd work with the existing staff who they thought were really good to keep some continuity in the club. That manager would be given a period of time to decide if he thought he could work with the existing staff. If he couldn't, then obviously be moved on if he could. But I was fortunate that each one sort of valued what I brought to it, really. And I always thought I tried to help every manager as best I could by not only in working with the goalkeepers, preparing them and developing them, in sort of helping the manager adapt to the new club and work with the players and do anything they needed, really. So Wolves was a fantastic club in that period that sort of looked after the staff that were there, of a really good group, tight staff. And any new manager came in, certainly had the full support of all of the backroom staff. And we just wanted to do well for the club, really, because the club had done well for us. Definitely such an important thing, having a good relationship with the manager, but I've picked up a lot along the way. I said John Ward, Mick McCarthy, what a fantastic manager he was, and he taught me sort of the way that he was so honest and open with the players, and how he sort of had a two-way respect and mutual respect with the players, how he went off his hard work. Again, his honesty with the players really was was what I thought, you know what, you always need to be honest. So just tell them how it is. So I don't tend to muck around the bushes anymore now. If I've got something to tell a player, if I don't think it was very good, I'll tell them. If I think it was really good, I'll tell them. So I got a lot from that. And every single manager I've worked with, I've picked up a lot. Some things you pick up, you think, oh, I wouldn't do that. I didn't really like that. I could see why that didn't work. But there's certainly a lot of brilliant stuff. And I've come to an incredible club now with a fantastic manager who, again, I just feel like I'm soaking up a load of information, a lot more ways of doing, particularly the detail.
Is he a funny fella, Mick McCarthy?
Yeah, brilliant. So he comes across quite dour on telly, but he's hilarious. Very dry, but very witty, very quick, very sharp of it as well. If you incur his wrath, yeah, he lets you know, but it makes you feel like you've sort of disappointed him more than anything, which again, I've picked up sort of the way that I try and not manage, but coach the goalkeepers I work with is that, like, don't let me down. I don't want them to let me, I want them to feel bad that they've let me down. So that was how Mick made you feel. He had a way of making the players feel that, like, they've let him down because he'd done everything he could. It certainly worked over the time he was there, and it's worked for him for years, obviously. I don't think, if you look at some of the managers I've worked for, you've got Mick McCarthy, Kenny Jackett, and now Lee Johnson, which you look three spring to mind, who have not had many jobs because the jobs they've had, they've stayed in for a long period of time, and you can't do that unless you're really good at what you do. You can't stay in a job as a manager and only have a sort of 3, 4, 5 jobs over a long career if you're not very good.
Well, to touch on the one you're working with now, and it's someone that I know well as well from, he was in my youth team back at Watford back in the day. So, known him for many years, Lee Johnson. Of course, his dad was a very successful manager as well. But Lee, as of speaking, is the longest serving manager in the Championship, as of Neil Harris moving on from Millwall. So, yeah, so it's, but it backs up what you say. Of course, he has been there a long period of time. And knowing Lee as I do, he's very, very intelligent, sees the game in a way that very few see it, very analytical. I know he'll stay out till 3, 4 in the morning watching games, watching players, like, so dedicated to his craft.
Yeah.
I also know that a couple of goalkeepers that have worked with him, he can be quite difficult for certain types of personalities, goalkeeper-wise, to work with him. So I'm intrigued as to how he is with you. Is it one where he allows you to deal with the goalkeeping department? Does he get involved with the goalkeepers much? Cause I know he's got his own ideas and opinions on goalkeepers.
Yeah, certainly has. But I think it's really good when a manager, I've worked for managers who's like, they, throughout the week, it's as if they don't really care about the goalkeepers. Who are these goalkeepers? They're doing their stuff over there and I'll have them when I want. And then, but on a Saturday, all of a sudden, oh, I really need them. And all of a sudden on a Saturday, they become really valuable, but they don't in the week. And Lee's certainly not like that. He takes a genuine interest in it and he's got some really good ideas on things as well. And he'll have a lot of discussions with me and he'll talk to them individually as well. It's really good. So the goalies themselves, if you spoke to Bence, he'd say how valued he feels by the manager. And this is sort of even before the season started. So the manager would take a lot of care and attention on him, speak to him individually and show him stuff individually. And he'll come down while we're working and take part and watch and talk and give ideas. And I don't feel like that's encroaching on me whatsoever. I think it's fantastic. The manager's showing a genuine liking and he really wants to see what's going on and help him and help me as well. And I think we're allowed to respond to that.
No, brilliant. And he asks a lot from his goalkeepers, doesn't he? I know the way that Lee plays, he likes to build up through the thirds, get the goalkeepers playing out from the back. And I guess it suits Dan's game, the way in which he plays. But he does ask a lot from the goalkeepers.
Yeah, he does. But there's not many managers that don't. Forest Green, for me, was the big one. Mark Cooper was again, another manager who taught me a lot, the way that they play out from the back. And I was doing quite a lot of the outfield coaching there as well at times. So that sort of gave me another insight, another string to my bow, if you like, seeing how he, like the demands he places on the goalkeeper were extreme.
Well, he gets them almost to step into like a sweeper position, almost defensive midfielder at times. Like he gets the goalkeeper to really dribble out, doesn't he?
Yeah, driving through and past the two centre-halves or three centre-halves or whatever they're playing at the time. Yeah, gave me a different way of thinking of things, approaching things, to be honest. So, yeah, after that, coming to Bristol City, and that was one of the main reasons, why Dan was put forward as a potential candidate, because of his distribution and how good he is, particularly now his quick releases. Under pressure, can see a pass and find a pass. And he takes a lot of care as well with his clearances. So it's not just smashing it clear. He's actually trying to find something or feel it into an area. And they're sort of some of Dan's key strengths, which we thought aligned to what we needed at Bristol City.
We're going to get to our final question that Rich always asks. But before we get to that, I'm just keen to get your thoughts on goalkeeping punditry. Now, we do a couple of shows now with this podcast, and I don't want it to get to a stage where we're bashing pundits all the time and really, really shouting from the rooftops for the Goalkeepers Union, because that's not what it's about. It's more about just trying to get a better understanding of the position. But occasionally, I throw a few bits out to Rich just to let him go a bit crazy, and it's quite interesting to watch, to be fair. But
yeah, good.
I'm just keen to know your thoughts on punditry from outfield players regarding goalkeeping and the misunderstanding that there seems to be about the position.
Yeah, there's a lot of misunderstanding and a lot of generic comments that some of them have picked up along the way. I think Gary Neville's been brilliant. He, from his time in England, I know he'd listen and work with Dave Watson a lot, and he'd sort of pick up stuff that was quite detailed, really, and I thought that was excellent. But you get other commentators who just use the throwaway. It's a nice hike for him. He's just in the right place. Didn't know much about it. Should catch that. That's one. A lot of thoughts forward without any sort of prior understanding of what's actually being faced there. You know, well, he should save that. Anyway, it's a good hike. So like, yeah, but he's had a lot to do there. He's taken a deflection or he can't quite see it. There's a lot going on that perhaps they won't see, don't understand. And it's quite easy to say something generic, I think, rather than specific.
Do you ever have these arguments on the training ground? Because we actually asked this as well to goalkeeper coaches or goalkeepers, that when they go in to training after the weekend and everyone's talking about a howler from so-and-so, do you have these debates on the training ground?
Yeah, just turn it into a bit of a laugh, really, because I just think otherwise you end up thinking too much, it's going to grind you down. So because these guys now are on, I mean, if you make a mistake, even if you're in the Championship, if you're in the Premier League especially, your error is highlighted on Sky Sports every hour on the loop for the next 7 days or until someone else makes a mistake. So I think you can't get too in-depth on it and let it get in your head too much. It's just a throwaway comment from a pundit. There we go, move on. Don't worry about it. Darren Randolph the other night made two unbelievable saves in the first half, and they're saying how terrific it was and he'd been amazing. And I just think he sort of fumbled a header then relatively easily. Like, could have gone over the line, and they're still talking about how brilliant he was. I think, well, if that goes in, all of a sudden you're going to say, what horrendous error, and forget about the brilliant stuff. So give some balance to it.
That's actually one of my big points. It's not necessarily, and I think people get confused. Sometimes I get a bit of stick here on the radio station that I'm with, where, oh, you're always protecting keepers. But it's not even that. It's more a case of, as you say, fair assessment. So it's praising the good. And a lot of the time, the good that's maybe not noticed, the great bit of sweeping up, the organisational side of it, like the positional side as well. Like you know, you get your positioning right, how much easier that can make goalkeeping. Yeah. So it might be the smaller details like that. But then similarly, the amount of times I'll see mistakes, I don't actually point them out, more for the fact that I know that you almost want the keeper to get away with it just because of the current state of punditry. You know, if one of the goalkeepers does something badly, I might see it, but I'll keep it quiet because I feel, well, there's no point in me highlighting that. But I would love that at some point, if the punditry got to that, where actually we could drill down into the details. And when something wasn't so good, we can let it be known why it wasn't good and look at it objectively rather than at the moment. I mean, you've just added, I've written down a couple more there that you've said. I always say it's flaps at crosses is one of my favourite. Flaps at crosses, beating at his near, don't forget beating at his near post, Pat. That's a favourite. You've just given me a couple more, though. I think we're going to have a dozen or so by the time we're done. Well, look, we are coming to the last question. You probably know what it is if you've listened to a couple of these podcasts already. And I like to ask this because it's always a very, very different answer. And I guess in your case, it'll be different again, given obviously the career you had and the amount of coaching you've done. But the question, Pat, of course, is goalkeeping. What has goalkeeping given you?
What's it given me? Oh, it's given me an enjoyment to go to work every day, that's for sure. And I just think, that sounds quite corny, but I think that's what I'm trying to do when I'm coaching, is so when the goalkeepers turn up every day, they think, you know, I'm going to enjoy it today. I'm going to work hard, but I know I'm going to benefit from it and I'm going to enjoy it. And that's what I get every day, the buzz of going in and thinking, what's happening today? There's going to be a million different permutations of what's going to happen, but I'm going to enjoy it and I'm going to make sure that there's going to be people who are going to get better at something. I can't really think of a good standard answer what it's given me. It's given me a lot of enjoyment. Is that good or is that corny?
That's spot on for me.
That is perfect. Pat Mountain, thank you for joining us.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks, guys.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Enjoyed that one. Slightly different coming from the coach's angle. Didn't really have a big playing career, so we didn't dwell on that, of course, as we said in the podcast. But the playing career he did have with Barry Town was really interesting. And the fact that the point that we brought up with those penalty saves in the UEFA Cup against Budapest for Sutas, that's where his coaching career started. Just out of nowhere, he happened to watch them. And as a result of watching them and then benefiting from watching them, he thought, do you know what? There could be something in this.
Yeah, fantastic. I think the story will be really inspirational to a lot of goalkeeper coaches that are out there. And I've known Pat now for quite some time. And of course, his journey as a coach is a very interesting one. The amount of success stories that he's had is very, very impressive. It was interesting what he said in regards to Marcus Hanneman working with him. A lot of goalkeeper coaches, again, will relate to this, where certainly when you're trying to get into it at a younger age and you're learning the ropes, you're doing your badges, and you will be dealing sometimes with goalkeepers who are a little bit older than you. And I think how you set your stall out is really important, because ultimately age doesn't really matter. And I know it can be easier sometimes if you feel like you're, you know, you're 40 odd and they're 25. You feel a certain air of authority because you might feel like you've got that bit more experience. But of course, the whole point is being a goalkeeper, being a goalkeeper coach are completely different things. And a lot of goalkeeper coaches who have previously been goalkeepers will fully understand that, that if you've done your badges and you've understand ways in which you can improve a goalkeeper, then they'll buy into it. Whether you're that much younger or that much older is irrelevant, providing the points you're making, you have a genuine interest of improving them and you're able to find those little bits where you can tweak, mold, improve, then age is irrelevant. One of the key things is saying it with authority. And I know I say this because I know Pat does this, and Pat's had so much success with this in that he believes in his methods. So when he's talking to goalkeepers, he is very firm. He's very assertive because he believes what he's saying is true.
I also found it quite interesting when he spoke about the dynamics, and he said the dynamics were interesting. That's what he said. I kind of felt like he didn't want to go too much into it, but obviously Wolves brought in Marcus Hanneman when they went into the Premier League. They had Wayne Hennessy. They had Carl Hakimi at the time. And you just kind of thought that maybe they didn't all get on that well. He said, you know, the requirements were different. Marcus Hanneman was more chilled, more relaxed, whereas the other two were a bit more vocal. They kind of wanted to really get into it. And you just sensed that maybe the other two had a few issues with Marcus Hanneman. However, at the end of the day, they all learned from each other.
Well, this again comes back to a goalkeeper coach's role, where you realise the higher up the pyramid you go, it's not necessarily just about your coaching ability. It's about your communication. It's about your man management, because you have got a goalkeeping department that you've got to work with. You've also got to have your goalkeepers back. So imagine this is a situation that most goalkeeper coaches find themselves in, where Monday morning they turn up for work, the manager drags them into the office and says, I think such and such should have done better with a goal at the weekend. Now you've got a choice. Do you then back your manager, who effectively is your boss, and it might be easier to be like, oh yeah, boss, yeah, you should have done better than that? Or do you actually back your own opinion? If you think that it's not fair what the manager's saying, do you then go back and give your opinion on what's happened? And I think, again, this is where the character of a goalkeeper coach is key. And it might not be natural to many goalkeeper coaches, but it is certainly a good bit of advice that if you believe in something, be firm in your beliefs, be assertive if you can. There's a way in which you can get your point across and not necessarily run the risk of losing your job or whatever it might be. Again, Pat, where I think he's got a really nice blend and balance is that he's passionate about goalkeeping. That comes across in the way in which he's speaks. He's knowledgeable about goalkeeping. He's always looking to learn more, and he believes in what he says. He will happily stand up to a manager if he believes he's right.
And to finish, he was at Wolves for 9 years. I don't know whether that's out of the ordinary for a goalkeeper coach, but he was there for a long time and only really left because Nuno Espirito Santo came in, brought in his own people. So eventually they had an amicable split.
Yeah, well, it is an interesting role again. You consider when a manager goes and joins a new club, who does he take with him? Well, he takes his assistant more often than not. He might take another first team coach. That normally tends to be the dynamic, the unit. Now, there are certain managers that may take a goalkeeper coach. Kevin Hitchcock, who we've had previously on the podcast, was a great example, where Mark Hughes wanted to take Kevin Hitchcock wherever he went because he knew just how good he was. And also he knew that he had his back and would give him honesty. So there's this part to it. But the other part is as well, if you've been at a club for a period of time, Pat Mountain was a good example. Simon Royce was a good example. Alec Chamberlain was a good example. Or actually, a club might not want to get rid of their goalkeeper coach. They might say to someone, you can come in, but we really like our goalkeeper coach. So
they're going nowhere. Andy Quire is another one at Stoke City who's very, very highly rated. So, of course, if the club feel they've got a brilliant goalkeeper coach, they'll do all they can to keep that goalkeeper coach in place, which Wolves did for a long period of time.
Yeah, of course, Nuno came in. He is a goalkeeper, so you can kind of understand that he had his own men, completely different change of the staff.
Yeah.
There. Okay, this has been another week, Richard.
It's been enjoyable.
It has, always.
Always is, Matthew.
Lovely stuff. This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast in association with GK Icon, Love Sport Radio and Goalkeepers 365. We will see you next time.